see you in the room. I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here this morning. George and Alex picked me up in the middle of the night last night. Unlike many of the folks here, I had to work yesterday. I work at a transmission repair place in San Francisco. Just too many vans to fish yesterday, so we left a couple to go. But I am glad to be here this morning, see some old friends, and to discuss the subject. I think that the subject, at least that I've been given, singleness of purpose and the action thing, is something that I would suggest that maybe I could talk for a while on it, and then I'd be glad to ask any questions or listen to your opinion on the subject, because it's something that is really of great interest to AA worldwide right now, this particular problem of singleness of purpose. Barney's going to talk to us about the 12 traditions at 10:30. I'd want to discuss the 12 traditions at any length. I just want to discuss the one or two that deals with this particular subject. But as you know, how they came about, most of you know, is that Bill Wilson was in a lot of problems, had a lot of problems. AA was having a lot of problems in the early 1940s, and it seemed to have peaked in membership and was going downhill, and nobody knew what to do about it. There were problems all over the country, and people getting drunk, and people hating other people, and, for example, the AAs in Chicago would not correspond to the AAs in New York, so they thought they were just all not spiritual enough, and the people in they only corresponded to Akron. People in Los Angeles wouldn't correspond to Akron. They thought they were too spiritual, too religious in this Ashram movement. They only would talk to New York. And all over the country, people were... One of my favorite deals was a guy in Florida. They had to remonstrate with him because he was selling memberships in AA. And they said, how could you possibly do such a thing? He said, well, it's quite simple. He said, down in Florida, once if you give people something, they won't pay any attention to it. If you sell it to them, they'll listen. And seems about right for Florida. When I'm in Florida, I said that about Virginia. I might have fumbled with my hypocrisy, that's the whole thing. But the guy who wrote the letter, mid-1940s from North Carolina, and said, we're going to go the way the Washingtonians become extinct. And Bill Wilson had never heard of the Washingtonians. So he looked them up and discovered that just 100 years before, there had been a movement 10 times as successful as Alcoholics Anonymous. And it had expired, and not one, very, very few people ever stayed sober. And it had been so successful, it had many, 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 many thousands of sober people. First time in history. And the more he wrote about it, the more he realized what a difficult thing he was in and what a similarity there was between the two movements. And eventually, based on what he could see in his own problems and the things he could read about the Ashram movement, the Washingtonian movement, he wrote the 12 traditions. Some years after the AA was in the operation, of course, and it reduced them eventually. AA didn't take them first. I'm sure Barney will tell us about that and cover the 12 traditions. But he listed them in order that he thought were important basis for what he could see about AA to save AA. He was trying to save AA. And that's why the first one, of course, deals with personal unity. Because there's so much dissension in AA, he felt that they somehow got to come together or they're all going to be dead. In fact, the first international convention in Cleveland, Ohio, 1950, was just supposed to be a one-time thing so that people would get together and try to unite as an effort of unity. It wasn't to be an ongoing thing every 5 years. And the second thing he discussed, of course, was there's always a great power struggle in Washingtonians, so who is in charge and who would be in charge. So he talked about there's no ultimate authority, it's the group conscience. And then the next important thing, he said, that the next important tradition that he thought was most important was the third tradition, which, oddly enough, it wouldn't seem very important there, does it? The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. But of course, he didn't write it in this, the traditions were not written in this form. As most of us know, they were written in the long form. And the long form says something different than this. It's an interesting thing. Around the country, people are always saying, and they do, I'm sure they do here, is, you don't have to be an alcoholic to be an AA, since the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. I've got a desire to stop drinking. I never drank much, but I've got a desire to stop drinking. So I'm a member, and I can participate. I do what I want to. And what he actually had written was, 3, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. No different. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. And so on. They never dreamed when he wrote this that in years to come there'd be non-alcoholics trying to sneak into AA. Letting good alcoholics in, but you can get non-alcoholics in all over. And then he goes on to that each group is autonomous. Then he talks about the 5th, which is the other operative tradition this morning. Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, not to the people who still suffer, not to the people with deep emotional problems who still suffer, but to the alcoholic who still suffers. Now, why do you think there's always a discussion? Of course, that's the way it is in AA, because we have such a revolving membership. There's always new people coming in who are going to straighten it out. Some years ago, I was one of those people. I survived that impulse. Some people don't. But why would you have to be an alcoholic to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, so what's the big deal? Well, you know, you hear the statement, it's all one big disease, that, you know, that's what the buzzword is in much of the country now. It's one big disease. Alcoholism, addiction, gambling perhaps, overeating. It's just one big disease. Do you know where that phrase comes from? It came from a treatment center that only had one van. Stick them all in there and send them to the meeting, AA meeting. It's all one big tradition. But listen, it may be have many manifestations of one disease, and maybe the recovery is identical. Who knows? But the problem is, the only thing that's ever been effective on a continuing basis for the treatment of alcoholics, briefly in 1850, or 1840 to 1845 thereabouts, was the Washingtonians, and now Alcoholics Anonymous. By an odd coincidence, are the only two organizations in the treatment of alcoholism that ever were consisted of alcoholics treating alcoholics. Not doctors treating alcoholics, or psychologists, or clergymen, or social workers, or counselors. Now, why is it so imperative that what's so good about alcoholics treating alcoholics? Because really, to be normally, most of us come in here, and it just doesn't seem, you know, getting a bunch of amateurs to help me. Professionals haven't been able to help me. What are these well-meaning amateurs going to do? And so this goes back to the nature of the problem we come here with, in my opinion. And the nature of the problem is, I would say, if among other things that we have in common, there are a few things that all of us have in common. But I would suggest one thing that everyone that I've ever known has in common at a gut level. And they come here and retain for a long time afterwards, and intermittently for the rest of their life, the gnawing suspicion and times general knowledge that my case is different. My case is truly different. I mean, I'm like him in a lot of ways. And that's what kills people like you and me. You know, I have never known a long-term slipper who doesn't believe that Alcoholics Anonymous works. They have believe it works. I see it dying around me. I've never known a long-term drinker who doesn't believe AA works. I've never known any strong drinker who doesn't believe AA works. So then the question is, why are we all in AA if it works? Because of that last little caveat. No question about it. AA works. But not for people like me. Not like cases like mine. And why is my case different? Well, I have a lot of reasons, but I suppose the basic reason would be because my problem really isn't alcohol. Wish it were, but it isn't. My problem is feelings of inadequacy, and fear sometimes. Kind of a spiritual loneliness, although I wouldn't call it spiritual loneliness, that'd be a little grandiloquent, but I would call it a feeling of apartness, separation, a feeling that people don't really understand how vulnerable I am, so I have to keep up a kind of hard veneer so people don't just see through me. And on and on and on. And I have discovered as a boy, when I started drinking, that alcohol has a tendency to overcome those feelings. And then sometimes they drink too much. And then people, it looks to them, and sometimes to me, like I got an alcohol problem. But after I'm sober a while, but off my alcohol problem, I realized that wasn't a problem at all. Because when I get off drinking, it's certainly nice not to be sick anymore, not get in trouble, not be arrested, ha ha ha. But all of a sudden I'm back to feeling inadequate. And not good enough, and not fitting in, and apart from. And it's a terribly lonely feeling. And so people like me, and I presume like most of us according to this book, wind up cursed by having to adopt an obsession and maintain that obsession for a long time. That somehow, some way, I will control and enjoy my drinking. It says the persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many of us pursue it into the gates of insanity and death. Why would people maintain such an illusion? Is it some terrible sickness, some sort of craziness with that deal? Is there some cross-wire, short-circuit in my brain? No. People want to make all these things so mystic and metaphysical and read all sorts of interesting things and psychological insights. It's a very simple thing. When I don't drink, I feel bad, and when I do drink, I feel good. That's all. That's the bottom line. And then you can put all sorts of levels and intricacies in it, but that's what it boils down to. But when I drink, I get in trouble and drink too much. So I've got to find a way not to drink so much, or not to drink without getting in trouble. And never knowing that once alcohol has the power to get rid of conflicts and problems in my life, there is no way for me to drink again socially. I have crossed the line. That's what they mean by crossing the line, in my opinion, when it begins to do for me what it's supposed to do. I didn't know I was supposed to do that, but what it does. It's an interesting thing, and just going through that, you know, in the concept. You hear people say, I drank myself into alcoholism. I don't know. In my opinion, I don't think that's possible. I think to drink yourself into some forms of alcoholism, certainly. Because I think there are different types of alcoholics. When Bill Wilson wrote this book, he was not a student of alcoholism, nor a student of physiological or psychological problems with alcohol. So he had to write what he felt, which many of us feel was somewhat inspired because he didn't know enough to write a lot of that stuff. And his experience was not sufficient to encompass the things he put in there. Again, and aside, you know, a lot of people believe that this book was divinely inspired. You have to believe that, but, you know, why? Because it was, because this book, written by a guy who was barely making it himself and most of his followers were drunk, he wrote a book that has saved and changed more alcoholic lives than all other therapies combined in the history of mankind. That's got to be some kind of an inspiration. But anyway, in this book, he refers to, in kind of groups, or alcoholics of our type. He doesn't define what alcoholics of our type are, or what other types are. I think most of us in our experience, at least in my experience, and certainly most of yours, you can think of other types of alcoholism that I've seen and been familiar with. People who drink, indistinguishable, they're drinking for you and me, perhaps drink a great deal, get drunk, get in trouble. And something bad happens, or their lives are threatened, or their security is challenged, and they say, hey, I quit. I'm not going to do that anymore. And most everybody in every alcoholic's family knows someone like that. And why can't you be like Fred? He drank too, but he was mad enough to stop. But that's the type of alcoholic I would imagine. The alcoholic who drinks heavily and has a reason to stop. The second type that I think of, offhand, would be the alcoholic who drinks and continues the business, and his body eventually becomes addicted to it, like you would anything to get used to. I mean, we talk about addiction, you know. I watched my wife a few years ago get off coffee. She went through a terrible time, headaches and terror. I never thought there could be any withdrawal from coffee. What could that be? But it certainly taught me a lesson. I went to school on her, I'll tell you. But alcohol addiction, because that really is, you know, and these people sometimes need to be physically withdrawn. Those are the people they send to the hospital. Always did. In Bill Wilson's time and our time. Because they get into such... That's where you get into your delirium tremens, DTs. That's not a drinking complaint. That's what happens in withdrawal. The way you beat DTs is to keep drinking. Isn't that funny? That's why these old 12-steppers seem so strange to people. They made a 12-step call, they'd bring a pint of whiskey around with them, so the guy wouldn't go into DTs. Give a little drink now and then. These people many times have to be hospitalized, as Bill Wilson was at the town hospital many times, and other people were hospitalized. And they come out of there and say, "Hey, Jesus, my life is screwed. I gotta not do that anymore." And they don't drink anymore. They really went through a terrible time. That's another type. Then there's the third type, I think, which is like us, who drink and get in trouble and have to stop, then discover that no matter what the motives are, they must go and drink again. And they're going to stop again. And that's what's so baffling to people like us. And that's why people can't understand. Jesus, you're off drinking. What the hell are you drinking again for? You got off it. And it baffles your family, and it baffles your loved ones, and it baffles your employers, and it baffles the cops, and it baffles everybody. And they ask you for an explanation, and you can't tell them I'm baffled too, so you say, leave me alone. Or if you're more involved, you just suddenly run away or something. So the question is, what is so different? What makes AA so different? Well, let's start with this premise. I'm sure there isn't a person in this room who hasn't had enough advice over the years to last them for 1,000 years. I had more advice by the time I was 21 than I'll ever need, as far as I can go. But advice, I've been getting advice, and so have you. And advice doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything when people will say, "I know how you feel," and you can't say it, but you ought to shriek at them. No, you don't know how I feel. That's the problem. Get your hands off me, you old puke. You know? That's what you may think, but you say, thanks. Because you're in that position, you can't afford to offend anybody more. And what makes it so unusual is that when you come here, if somehow you can stay here and be around a while, eventually, sooner or later, I'm sure Barney talked about it last night, Mike, in his case it was me, which by lucky break, but could be anybody, you hear someone who talks about how you feel. You, my God, how could that be? Does he know about me? Does she know about me? And little by little, the first tenuous token of identification comes along. Not someone who gives me advice, but someone who says, yes, I know the feeling. But they're looking at me funny sometimes. And that sometimes people don't care. And no one seems to love me the way I love them. And on and on. My God, somebody knows. And when I drink alcohol, it makes it all right. Yeah, I know that. And all of a sudden you start to identify, as I've often said. For the first time maybe in your life, there's a realistic rope across the abyss. And then you keep working at it, hopefully. And you develop a little walkway across there, and eventually you develop a little road across there, and eventually you have an 8-lane superhighway. But for 95% of people like you and me, they will never know there's a way to get across that abyss. Because they're here to stop drinking. And alcoholics of our type, stopping drinking just makes it worse. But who would guess such a thing? We've never heard that. And you say, well, why would identification mean so much? Well, I'll tell you why. Because without identification, it is all just information. I like information, I like to hear it, but it doesn't stir me in the levels of my gut. It stirs my head. What a great, I've been but I've been working with narcotics addicts for over 25 years. I think I know as much about addiction as most addicts. But if I could go to an AA meeting, someone, somebody's up and talks about drugs for an hour, I'm not stirred here. It's interesting here. But that's what I want to hear. I don't know why, but I leave the meeting unsatisfied, as though I've been given a meal without salt or something. It's there, but it isn't there. Probably a great example of that I've said many times. When I was about 2 years sober, 2 or 3 years sober, they formed OA. At that time, it's hard to believe, but I was a tawny, scrawny lion. Carol, was I skinny when you first met me? I was skinny for years. I weighed about 100. She asked me to be your sponsor when I was skinny, and ever since then, it's just been going downhill. So they used to call me Curly at that time. But I was a tawny, scrawny lion. I didn't really front two theater, but I'd learned to curl my lip like this, so it's... That is je ne sais quoi, I thought, if I could pronounce it. But they met around at the Our Savior's Church on the corner of Olympic and Crescent Heights. They had a little OA meeting. One of the first two, maybe the only one, half, all I know. And the woman that phoned it was a member of AA and was also a compulsive eater. And NA had been formed a couple of years before. I knew the founders there. And G had been formed a couple of years before. This was OA. And I knew the founders of all these others. They all founded within a short time, within a few couple miles of each other in Los Angeles. They all had permission from AA to use the 12 steps. And one of those work said, we tried to get AA to come up and talk to us. We didn't have any success record yet. We've only been going a short time. And I heard you talk on your obsessions. Could you come over to our meeting and talk on obsessions? And I said, sure, I'd be glad to. It took me a while. Years later, I should never ask me to talk on the recovery from obsessions. Just obsessions. I didn't know that. So I went over there. And about 6 or 7 fat old ladies sitting around the table. And they really missed the best part. And as I talked about obsession. And I thought I helped out. And I sat down there and they had their little sharing session and I listened. And I couldn't believe my ears what these people were saying. This woman had eaten a whole chicken and then part of venison. Jesus! You're sick. Someone would have eaten pints of ice cream, just pints. I didn't want to say, it wasn't my position to say anything, but I wanted to just say, why don't you just have a dish of ice cream for Christ's sake and put it on? Some woman over here was saying, I ate and ate, but I couldn't eat anymore. I went to the bathroom, put my finger on my throat, and chewed it so I could eat some more. I said, oh, Jesus. Don't bother shaking hands with me after the meeting. I can see doing that for drinking, but eating, so. Because if we was just information. I didn't identify with the feeling they got from eating. It's the same way of narcotics addiction. Two members of AA who are narcotics addicts form Narcotics Anonymous, so that narcotics addicts, even whether or not they were alcoholic, could go and identify. Not to get the steps are the same anywhere. To identify. Why would you want to identify? That's why one member of AA, kind of Jim Willis, formed Gamblers Anonymous. His wife was Sybil Willis, who just until recently was had the longest sobriety in the world. She died about 2 weeks ago. But he formed GA, Gamblers Anonymous. If you go to GA meetings anywhere in the world, you find he's revered like they revered Bill Wilson. I know him quite well. In fact, there's an irony there. He got so active in GA, they didn't really have much time for AA, and he got drunk and died. But they still revere him because he never gambled again, that's what they identify. Now, what is so important about identification? Because with identification, as I say, I begin to react viscerally rather than intellectually, and I get, if I can believe you understand how I feel, I can follow your advice. But if I don't believe you know how I feel, your advice, I have to edit it and see if it doesn't really fit people like me at all. I know you mean well. My minister meant well when I was a boy, but he didn't have my sexual urges. And my doctor means well, and my psychiatrist in Texas means well, but he didn't have my depressions. And on and on and on. And here, somewhere can I find somebody that I think you have a glimmering of how I feel, and is doing better than I am, and maybe I can get something that is just almost impossible to find. Enough respect for that person to do what they say, even though I might not agree with it. And that is the dividing line between sobriety and not making it. And that's why today, all over the world, we have to fight to defend the singleness of purpose. It isn't that we're above narcotics addicts or below them, or above gamblers or below overeaters or anything else. But that's why they formed Cocaine Anonymous. That's why they formed all these other organizations. Because identification is the basis of recovery here. Without that, it is just information. And there's nobody that has not enough information to last them forever. So I guess I'm having a problem sometimes in our groups because you do all to be always fighting and arguing, and people say, Jesus, don't be such a hard nose. It's all one big news, come on. And we all have to fight that. It's kind of hard. I'm lucky because I'm in a group where the tradition is so ingrained that it doesn't come up. Very rarely if it ever comes up. I might help you, there's a folder called Problems Other Than Alcohol, little blue one, written by Bill Wilson, by my wallet. I always carry that with me, ready to whip it out, because it specifically says, can a non-alcoholic be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? He says, no. Can we invite him to open meetings? Yes. Should we make him believe he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? No. Why? Because he may stay sober somehow, he may never drink, but he's going to kill people behind him. That's all. One of the worst things that I know in AA is for people who come to AA, get sober, do these things, feel good, get bored, get into other things, and then start teaching that crap to new people before they ever got into what keeps them sober. And there are a few speakers, very famous speakers, who are doing that today. And I despise that worse than anything I know. Worse than stealing any treasuries or anything. Because you are literally stealing newcomers' opportunity to find Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is why we have to maintain some certain spree, not to be wonderful or good, but so that my grandchildren, your grandchildren, somebody down the line, when they come to AA someday, hopefully not, but if they do, although the further I go along life, I hope they all become alcoholics and come to AA, because it seems to be a jungle out there without anything, I'll tell you. I hope they come here and find something that they can identify with, the language of alcoholism. You know, to me, and I'm sure to a lot of people, the greatest, clearest, finest, slickest talk, encompassing all the philosophies, is all very interesting and fun. They make you laugh. Some of the people bring their notes up to the podium to make sure that they know all the jokes and things you're going to say. But the Alcoholics Anonymous is that boob getting up there doesn't even hardly connect, doesn't know what I don't know if I belong here, but I always felt so terrible. But when I drank, I felt better. And now drinking's just killing me, and I come here and hope you people can help me. Thank you. And that is Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the name of the game. People seeking people. I know a couple years ago, the World Service Conference tried to find a theme for the year. And they usually are about 5 years late with anything they do up there if they don't offend anybody. I'm not judging them, I'm just reporting. Even they decided the theme for the year would be singleness of purpose. Singleness of purpose, that's what it's about. There are many aspects of addiction, but alcoholism can only be treated successfully, apparently, by other alcoholics who can break through that veneer, that wall of difference. That's why we must protect what we do here. And don't be afraid to gently mention your group or to those who do not understand it. Flip out your Bill Wilson folder. Do you know more about it than Bill Wilson? One of our big speakers today, a man named Bobby E. He doesn't speak as much anymore, thank God. But his current cry is this. If you were sick, you wouldn't go to a medical book written in 1939, would you? So why would you go to a, if you're an alcoholic, why would you want to go to a book written in 1939? There's been such advances since then. We know much more about psychiatric. And I suppose killing is almost. But you know, it's, you pay your money, you take your choice. You listen to people. But for me, I'll tell you this. In a few months, it'll be 40 years since I've had a drink. And the only therapy I've had in all that time is Alcoholics Anonymous. That came after slipping almost 10 years where I tried every therapy. And I'll guarantee you this. If there were a better way to go, I would be there doing it. Because as much as I love you, my loyalty level is zilch. But it is out to you and me. I'm glad I moved to Southern California so I could learn Spanish. Adios, mama. So that, I think, is why probably one of the most important things on our plate today. Singleness of purpose. And let's protect it as long as we can. Thank you. Rather than these interminable standing ovations, why don't you start a love offering? Does anybody have any questions? You want to talk about any aspect of singleness of purpose running for a few minutes? We've got a few minutes. Okay.
Hi, I'm Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
I don't know if this is a big deal or not, but my area, there's a lot of open meetings, like a lot of
Mm-hmm.
That meetings are open, and I don't know if there's an importance on closed meetings and staff meetings. I know speaker meetings are fine to be open, but I don't know if you can talk about the importance between open and closed meetings and why they're closed and why they're closed.
The question is, the difference between open and closed meetings and book study meetings that are open, and I know that's true in some areas of the country. That always just staggers me. That always just staggers me, because I don't know of anything like that that I'm aware of in my area. And yet it's all over the country, so I guess I'm spoiled. To me, the difference between an open meeting and a closed meeting is quite simple. An open meeting is where we have someone discussing in a general way what they used to be like, what happened, what they're like now, or some concept of Alcoholics Anonymous, or public information purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous. The closed meeting is closed to do the very thing I've just been talking about, alcoholics talking to alcoholics, and some freedom in describing things and discussing things that non-alcoholics have traditionally never understood and will not understand in this open meeting either. To me, to have a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where non-alcoholics can participate is just an exercise in futility. It's just the antithesis of everything we believe in. And yet people are still, they want to keep reinventing the things and reinventing the wheel. I remember when I was kind of new in my area, meetings would have people's doctors come and talk as the main speaker. And ministers, that was not uncommon at all in the 1950s. Having ministers come, and psychiatrists, and as though, look, they like us. Isn't it? They maybe just want to scream, you know. And I think that's a very good point. In my opinion, that the purpose of AA is one alcoholic talking to another. It isn't to get approbation. As far as I'm concerned, Al-Anon should not be speaking to AA ever. And in my opinion, AA should be speaking to Al-Anon, but if they want to have them, that's their business. But identification, if you're going to just do entertainment, then that's not a meeting, that's something else, you know. Because I can't imagine why a non-alcoholic would be asked to speak at an AA meeting, because you've just taken away the purpose of the meeting. I don't have any answer how people can justify having non-alcoholics speak at an open AA meeting, discussing the book, discussing anything, except for anything else. It just seems, what is this? This is not AA, it's group therapy, for Christ's sake. So by accident, you're right.
I'm Bob, and I'm an
alcoholic. Hi, Bob.
Several years ago, our group had a rehab show up for a closed meeting. And they were doing that for a couple months. And finally, one of the members got irritated. Some of them may not be alcoholics at a closed meeting. So he, when one of the rehab people spoke up, they announced themselves as an addict. And he challenged, he said, well, this is a closed meeting. Do you have a desire not to pick up the drink? And the guy said, well, I'm not a drinker. So his problem was other than alcoholism at a closed meeting. So then what happened was we had about half that rehab get up and walk out of the meeting. So now you have...
That's a break.
Now you have 12 people standing outside the church not welcome at our AA meeting. And I wonder, how does your group handle if you have a rehab show up and they're non-alcoholics at a
group? We would ask the rehab not to send them. Do not send... The question is, when you do rehab, send a whole bunch of people, many of non-alcoholics, to your meeting. I would go to the rehab, certainly have some go to the rehab and say, please don't send, our concept is Alcoholics Anonymous is a closed meeting of alcoholics only. If they're not alcoholics, they have no business to speak. I mean, they won't identify, they won't fit in. And we would appreciate if you didn't send them, because of course they have to stand outside the door. Just that we don't love them, we want them all to be well. We hope they find an NA meeting somewhere, or a CA meeting, but Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. I would think that would be the solution we would use in our group, probably. That happens all over the country. As I say, it's the same thing again. It's all one disease because it gets them all in one van out of here. It's a joke, but it's not a joke. And so I think Your number one problem, your number one mission, your primary purpose is to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That is your number one aim. Everything else is secondary to that. Looking good to some addict in treatment ranks about 9th or 10th. Okay? Okay. Of course, this is only my opinion. I'm required to say that. I secretly feel like I'm talking for Bill and Dr. Bob in heaven, but I...
Hi,
Arnold.
I'm
out. Hi, Arnold.
I have a question. Tell us a little bit about your experience with the growth of your home group and how that has helped you maintain your seeking purpose.
I didn't quite understand that, Arnold. Say it again.
Could you tell us a little bit about the growth of the Pacific group and how that has helped you to maintain your singleness as purpose?
Well, he has asked for me to describe how the growth of my home group has helped our single, our observation of the singleness of purpose. I would have a tendency to believe, Arnold, that it's just the other way around. Our singleness of purpose has contributed to the growth of our home group. Unlike many groups around us, we maintain certain standards. We are known, as I believe your group probably is known, and most activist groups are known, as goddamn Nazis. But we just could step away. I would say, as I say, whenever people come to the Pacific group, they know, there's no question, that certain things are going to happen. The meeting is going to start on time or a little bit early. It's going to have good coffee made by people who care. They don't care about the coffee, they just care what you think about their coffee. There are going to be speakers who are speaking on Alcoholics Anonymous. And the people who participate, who know they're going to participate, are going to be dressed as though they respect AA. That's all. And that's how, over a long period of time, very few people came. But now, as most of you know, it's the largest group in the world. 1,200 people every Wednesday night sit in that room. Exciting. John got sober there. Carol got sober there. Barney got sober there. A number of people in this room got sober there, but in various stages of recovery. And the greeting group said, what is your secret? Send us your format. It isn't a secret format. It's a matter of consistency, of consistently advocating Alcoholics Anonymous, of consistently trying to abide by these traditions. I don't know a group in the world that significantly has a stronger adherence to the 12 traditions than ours. I'm sure we all know that's the only one, but I don't know significantly more. And it isn't always expedient. It isn't always... but I believe that certainly is one of the great reasons for it. I used to think it was my charismatic personality, but after I left office, it really took off. That probably wasn't entirely it. But I hope that doesn't answer your question very well, Arnold, but it's a correct answer. Take that back to your little friends in Washington.
I'm John, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
What do you feel about new people that come in as dually addicted, that they are alcoholic and or whatever, and what's the best way to talk to them and let them...
The question is, that's a biggie today, but you promise to come in and are duly addicted and say, I'm an alcoholic and an addict, I'm an alcoholic and a gambler, alcoholic and a... They may may not be, I mean, I'm sure there are these things. In my experience with the people I sponsor and the people who they sponsor and the people who they sponsor, we ask them to say, I'm an alcoholic, which we believe encompasses all of these various other things. And the reason not to say, I'm an ANDA, is not, earlier it says, it's saying in effect, look, I'm different. And that feeling of difference is the greatest enemy you and I ever have. That's what we're always trying to overcome here, all these dumb things. And the ANDA, it's just, you know, boy, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And I'm a gambler. It is very important, at least in my opinion, that their sponsors or the people who work with them are well-intentioned older people. Try to explain to them. We're not against, we know that you're an addict probably. You probably are. But for the purposes of what we do here, when we say alcoholic, you're saying, that I get away from the world. And I use alcohol and other things. All of us have used other things. We use food sometimes and sex and also all the things the book describes. But the point is, I am trying to stabilize, I'm trying to find a way to live in the world so I don't have to do that anymore. The alcoholism is only important is that it gives me a primary identification so I'll do some of the things that help all these other things. So I would say that, in our view, I don't think John, now you look sober in our group, I can't recall anybody who gets up and says, I'm an ANDA. Now, you know, in thousands of people, you'd think there'd be somebody saying, I'm an ANDA, but there aren't. Because they're trained not to recommend. I mean, they're told not trained, but I mean, they're explained. We have ways. But that's a good point there, John. I think it should be described. I'm sure you'll ever write it out to you. People say with such pride as they look, I'm better than you, or tougher than you, or sicker than you, or all they say is, I'm not like you, look at me. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Carol. I'm not calling.
Carol?
One of these ANDAs includes, for example, for that that is a little common in the area that you're looking at and experience comes from you because of the invitation, you know.
That's a good way. The question is, what do you do about Prozac in your area? And, no, really, that's a big problem. A lot of areas of the country, every area in that area is on Prozac, almost every area. My opinion, and the opinion of the people I sponsor, and the opinion of the people they sponsor, is when you take Prozac, you can now start your sobriety date over again. Because the purpose of AA, we've got to remember, is not to get sober, to get off alcohol. That is not the purpose of AA. The purpose of AA is to live in reality. And being sober is no big deal. Every drunk is sober intermittently. The problem is, how do you live in reality is you have to start again. So you have to take things, you have to alter your perception of reality, which we'll discuss this evening. And I know that it's a common thing. I was sponsor a doctor, and I also know another doctor who's a very famous AA doctor. And they tell me, I'm not sure it's true about all doctors, but they told me years ago, it's natural doctors would give alcoholic sedatives and think, here these neurotics come to your office whining, they try to treat it for a while. And here's someone in the next room that's really sick. Here, Take these as new and good luck to you. I'm really high. Get that sick some bitch out of my office here. Give me that cold, but I mean, how do you treat me like? Keep them quiet. Get out of here. Because they do not understand the nature of the illness. They can understand it intellectually, but unless they've experienced the transformation of perception by drinking alcohol, it's just as information to them. And Prozac makes you feel better, no question about it. It eases you up, so does Valium, so does Librium, so does Thorazine. A lot of things. Prozac is not quite so intense. But for me, and the people that I sponsor, Alcoholics Anonymous is a technique to live in sobriety and be responsible for my actions. And that makes me feel like I've grown up more than I've ever felt in my life. I have ups and downs, and there are downs. Maybe Prozac would make me feel better. But I've never had any more ups. And so all you can do, Carol, I would think, is the people you sponsor, ask them to not take Prozac. And tell them to ask the people they sponsor not to take Prozac. And if you can't fire somebody because they take Prozac, you don't really fire them. What I have to do, I don't want to hurt their feelings, I don't want to destroy them. I have to say, I am sorry, I can't be your sponsor. Not because it's bad to take Prozac, I have no opinion on that. But I've never taken Prozac, so I don't understand the problem. I am doing you a disservice. I'm making you think as though you have a sponsor and you don't believe what I say, so you don't have a sponsor. So you should get someone you believe. In my opinion, that's how I would handle it. I know it's a tough situation. I don't envy you being in that situation. Yes, sir.
We talk a lot about drug addiction being the thing that's the practice to primary purpose or single purpose, but in the tradition it talks about outside affiliations and money and property and prestige as things that diverge from our primary purpose. Do you think that's still a problem? Can you say something about that?
Oh, sure. Sure, there's people, there's all of those things. Any other human beings. Money, property, and prestige should do those my primary purpose. It doesn't say that in traditions specifically, but I think that we could say that clubs, groups, group treasuries, who's got the best club, who's got the best this and that, people get wrapped up in the panoply of human success, and they do diverse for my primary purpose. No question about it. We have a lot of diversions from my primary purpose. My job diverts me from my primary purpose. My children divert me from my primary purpose. Only the time you learn to deal with it. But when I'm talking about narcotics addiction, I'm not talking about is that it's diverting us from our primary purpose at all. I'm saying the primary purpose is to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if I don't identify, I won't be carried. The other things are just human things. God isn't it, must be once a week somewhere, some group would let their treasury swell up for no apparent AA reason. And then the treasurer gets drunk and spends it. That happens, and they're always deciding, shall we go to the cops or not? What do you think? Down in Orange County recently, someone just went for, several thousand dollars. North Harvard Club. They saved a whole bunch of money and the treasury went drunk and went to Mexico with it. I mean, that's why we, among other things, they do not save money. Because it all gets to be a distraction, diversion, and human beings are human beings. AA should be kept simple. And people just can't be like that. It should be kept simple. And it's just too simple to be exciting, so we have to screw it up. I know what you're saying, and that's right. Yes, sir. Ma'am. Somebody raise your hand over here? No. Okay.
Hi,
Bill.
Man, check out us at the lab, we made a little slip about, we trained them not to do that. Because there is something strong to be said, I think, about, you know, those disciplines people are trained.
Some comments made, but,
My sense to me has to do with the situation that occurred in our hometown, and I'm wondering if you have experienced it already, because there are those set meetings.
The question is, what do you do about drinking? It gets back to that abbreviation again we talked about earlier in the third tradition. I think maybe you ought to read the long form of the third tradition and explain that's what it means. We ought to help all those who suffer from alcoholism. Then if you want to ask the question, is there anyone here who does not suffer from alcoholism? That kind of winnows it down considerably. But there's all sorts of people being cute all over. There's all bleeding hearts. No, you can't hit them out. They're suffering human beings. I didn't want to put that on the audio tape, but I... But anyway, we're out of time. We're out of time for a cup of coffee, and we'll then listen to the real story of the traditions at 10:30. So I thank you all, and let's show this ready to prayer. Well, why don't you close the meeting?
Okay.